Hello, and welcome to Arms of the Tide. I'm Quinn Welsh Wilson, facilitator. As this is our inaugural episode and our episode zero, I wanted to take a minute to let you all know about the show and the world that the show will be taking place in. Arms of the Tide is an actual play of the wonderful game Mutants in the Night by DC, about people banding together to fight against corrupt systems, build community, and a safer future for all. Unlike Mutants in the Night as written, however, we will be using an original setting which we believe aligns with the overall design and tonal vision of the game. The world Arms of the Tide takes place in pulls a lot of inspiration from works like the Final Fantasy games and other Japanese role-playing games, where a dangerous world is dotted with fantastical and magi-technological cities, each with unique cultures, problems, and ways of looking at magic and technology. How this works is that a current of magic flows through all the world and pools up in certain places called nexes, where magic resonates with a certain material, called a catalyst, making wondrous marvels of magical technology possible. Outside of the nexes, however, the power fades away and becomes inert, meaning only in the cities built on these nexes is their technology functional, and these cities eventually give way to the wilds beyond them, where travel is harsh and danger abounds. There are four sapient species we will see in Arms of the Tide, each of whom populate the world's cities about evenly. First is humans, who need very little explanation. Second are the M'gai, purple plant people who take on all shapes and sizes due to their needs, desires, and ideals, in an adolescent process called budding. While some adult M'gai choose to look like humans, the other sapient species, or various animals, the only limits on the forms they may take is their imagination and how long they have to grow. Next are the Dov. A small species, often standing at around 3 feet in height, the Dov look like a combination between seals and penguins, standing on 2 feet with flippers or wings, and coated in feathers, fur, or a combination thereof. Finally, there are robots. Robots are what happens when the magical resonance of a nexus inhabits and awakens in a piece of technology. Sometimes this process is instantaneous, and in others it is slow, like a form of childhood. Some robots carry humanoid frames, having been created for a function that facilitates that. But it is just as likely that something else might awaken, meaning robots often come in all shapes and sizes. The city Arms of the Tide will start in is Ao, the city of metal. Ao looks a lot like a near-future version of a city in our own world, with slums, skyscrapers, cell phones, and more, all made possible by the power of metalwork and magic. All is not rosy in Ao, however, as Ka Technologics, the company who owns most of the metal in the city, has a stranglehold on all life and government in the city. In Ao, to defy Ka is to defy everything. Those who would choose to resist Ka are known as the Arms of the Tide. With all that said, let's meet the cast and characters. As you can remember from the introduction to this episode, I am Quinn, and I am joined by the cast of the show, and I'd love for them all to introduce themselves to you right now. Let's go around the table and tell the nice people hello.
Hello, nice people. My name is Chanel, and I am best friends with Cleo, and Cleo is a human who lives here in Ao. She is a detective, like a private detective. Usually she helps people out who are being dicked over by corporations or gangs, basically just individuals who can't stand up for themselves, and she uses her skills to do so, and she has a really good success rate. Cleo is a black female. She has very springy, curly brown hair that is very unruly. She has brown eyes, and she's about 5'3", 5'4". She looks pretty average when you look at her, but she uses that to her ability, so people often underestimate her. She has a smile that makes people feel like they can confess to her, or at least kind of rely on her, even if she does not have the best intentions. It seems like it is a very casual, friendly smile that people could mistake for a goody two shoes.
Nice. So we're playing the tabletop role playing game Mutants in the Night by DC. And that game does require that you put on your character sheet two friends and a rival. Could you tell us a little bit about your two friends and a rival, Chanel?
Sure. They're actually all from her school, just because this is a smaller town that she is from and that she grew up in. So a lot of the people that she knows, they're still in the same area. Like, even if she's older now and she hasn't been in school for probably 10 years. She still hangs out with her friends that she grew up with that lived on her street. Her first friend is Luke, who is a human. They're from school. They work on a lot of auto mechanics and auto parts cars. And Sasha is a robot she also knows from school. Sasha is into fortune telling and anything that doesn't have a name for it, the supernatural, the unexplained, which is kind of cool because she makes for a really good friend. And we have her rival, who is a dove named Dave, who used to bully her in school. They're actually part of a gang now that they have a lot of animosity towards. Dave looks out for himself and just is a mean-spirited person that tries to take advantage of other people. And Cleo, being the person who does stick up for others who cannot stick up for themselves, would immediately try to shoot that Dave down just because they have clashing personalities and ideas.
All right, cool, cool, cool. Two questions for you. Does that school have a name? And does that gang have a name?
That school's name is Rubicon.
And crossing the Rubicon.
Yeah, Rubicon. We all went to Rubicon. And the name of the gang is Ace.
All right. So Ace is the name of the gang.
Yep.
All right. Who would like to introduce themselves and their characters next? Because, hey, characters got all up in the mix so fast. It's fucking wet and wild with all the characters we got flying around.
Ooh, it's all over the place. I am John. You may know me from the System Mastery podcast, or you might not. I don't know. Mm. But I am going to be playing Local 134. Is a robot that, if you imagine the Iron Giant as being only about, you know, seven and a half foot tall, would be more like what Local looks like. Rivets and steel, very, for a robot, does not look very high tech or anything. Was made for construction, and they did not exactly put much more aside from the ability to do that into his design. In this particular setting, when a robot is made, it takes a while for them to gain full sapience. So Local has only really just awakened within the last year or two. And so it's one of the things where usually in this particular area, robots are made more by companies and corporations for a specific purpose that then use them until they awaken, and then they're allowed to go do whatever they want. So Local has a slow, purposeful demeanor to him. A lot of things are still new for him to process, so he tends to take his time on things. But when he is passionate about something, it is very clear. He doesn't have a particularly good filter for something like that. And you want me to go ahead and get into the friends and rival?
That would be excellent.
So he has a friend named Transport B73. Just like Local, a lot of the robots are given designations for what they do rather than names when they're made. So Transport was made to be a bus driver. So their design is much different than Local's. They're more about vision and reaction time and being able to do transport rather than construction. Mm-hmm. And Transport has just awakened, so they don't really know basically anything about themselves at this point. They are still figuring everything out, and Local wants to be there for them and help them through that process. Other friend is Marv Loach. Was a Dov that was the foreman on his construction site that was to him what he is trying to be to Transport B73. Marv, instead of trying to take advantage of Local's situation when he was awakened, he helped him figure out what was going on, helped him try and find a place to stay, and is still one of the few people that he can go to when he has questions about things.
Okay, perfect. How about that rivalry?
So Local has a rivalry with a human named Robert Sirico. And Sirico runs a business called Advanced Placements, which is almost like a temp agency for newly awakened robots. But when you scratch the surface at all, you see that it's very exploitative. They'll usually, robots will come in and they'll just put them right back into the same jobs they were just doing, because they'll say that's what you're suited for doing, and then give them a very low pay because they don't really understand what they should be making or what the process is for work. So he has been just sort of on the sideline in addition to the other things that he does. He has a particular vendetta against Advanced Placements and Sirico himself.
Local has written a lot of angry letters to the company.
He has. He is a concerned citizen.
Very concerned. So I figured that I would ask you a question. For the new listeners, people who haven't listened to the Ichor and Breath episodes of the podcast Swallows of the South, and that is, I know that Local is given to raising a lot of cats. What cat is the best cat?
They're all the best cat. The best cat is the one that he's currently hanging out with at any given time. Usually the most mischievous one, though, is Mrs. Good Cookie.
Good. Good. Love Mrs. Good Cookie. All right. Our final player and the love of my life. Please introduce yourself.
I already introduced myself. I'm sorry.
Oh, damn.
excuse you, John. You better step off. I will fight you.
Slap me.
I will. So I am Joe, and I, like Chanel and Quinn and John, have guested on the Orpheus Protocol. I mean, Chanel is more of a cast member, really. I guested on System Mastery and Movie Mastery and was on Swallows of the South as Goldamite of the Dawn. And now I am here for our new show to play Lions. And Lions is an MGAI, and MGAI in this setting are functionally like sentient plants. Specifically, they are purple plant people, basically, except people is kind of not the best term, because Lions looks like a wolf. Lions is actually a spark dandy, which is a type of MGAI that looks like a wolf kind of combined with flammable dandelions. And so, yeah, that's me.
I'm curious about that synthesis between wolf and flammable dandelion. Where do the lines blur?
Lions, for the most part, looks like a wolf, except where there would be fur, there is a kind of gray, lavendery grass over their body. They have blue florets. So where dandelions have those bright orange or yellow florets, lions has bright blue ones along their body, mostly focused on like the main body. They kind of bleed out along the legs and don't touch their tail that much. And then the seed heads are a very dark purple, and it's actually the part that connects to the seed head that has like a match-like property and can burn. And so their tail is basically covered in those dark purple seed heads.
Perfect. So we know that Local is a local robot rights activist and that Cleo is a private detective. What is Lion's occupation?
So Lion's actually works at the clinic. Lion's actually works at a few clinics in the neighborhood. They take up work at one of the paying clinics and at two of the free clinics in the area. And so they're really big on stretching themselves thin. But one of the benefits of being an MGAI is that Lion's doesn't really need to sleep. And so they have time for it. And as much as the resistance can pay Lions, Lions feels bad relying on them to cover everything when not everyone has the skills to like perform medicine and be paid well for it. And Lions does. So they work like three shifts at the local hospital, and then they work rotating shifts at the two free clinics.
All right. And that is in the capacity of a doctor?
Yes.
Perfect. Is there anything else that you wanted the dear listeners to know about before you introduced your friends and rivals?
I mean, I'm really excited to be here, and I hope you all enjoy this.
Also, what about Lions?
Well, lions actually came from a different town. Lions came from Ostal, which is the city that uses pigment. And so lions actually has a harness. Listeners, if you are familiar with those dog walking harnesses that actually like clip around the dog's front, lions wears one of those that's made out of that same cloth-ish thread-like material, but is lined with metal. That way, Lions' pigment can interact with the town's interface of metal.
Perfect. Now, it's time for two friends and a rival. Everyone's favorite schoolyard game.
So I guess you and Chanel are my friends and John would be my rival.
I find that hard to believe.
I have no rival.
Yeah. John's far too affable.
So Lions lives with Talson, who is a Dov, and Talson's daughter Fiette, who is also a Dov. And Lions absolutely positively adores Talson, except that bitch keeps eating her peanut butter. And oh my gosh, is that's so stressful. And so Lions keeps putting it like higher and higher away in their room. And it's like on top of the fridge now. And it is a daily battle to save that peanut butter. And then Lions is also friends with Philly from the Ichor and Breath arc. So Philly is basically one of the co-runners of one of the free clinics that Lions works at. And it is also the clinic that Lions' sibling Giants works at. Giants, like Lions, is a spark dandy. And they only work at the free clinic because Lions makes enough from the resistance work and the paid clinic to be able to cover their part of the rent at the flat that they have with Towson and Fiette. So Lions's rival is Chaney. So Chaney is a punk ass bitch that follows Lions around, and to say like stalks would even be more accurate, because Chaney has come all the way from Ostal, because Ostal is overrun by gangs that are associated by different pigment types, and you wear the pigment of your gang. And Lions and Chaney used to be part of the same gang, but when it was being taken over and kind of dissolved, Lions and Chaney went to different gangs because Lions wanted to see it through. And Chaney has never forgiven them because they used to be friends, and Chaney feels very betrayed, but Lions feels that Chaney betrayed their gang by dipping out so soon.
Okay, so they have followed Lions to AO because of this deep sense of betrayal.
Yeah.
Are they trying to get Lions back on the grift? Are they trying to kill Lions as some sort of revenge for the betrayal? What's going on there? Hey, there could be a third option. Those aren't the only two reasons people do stalking.
Unfortunately, I know that's not the only two reasons people do stalking. That is up for you to decide, because Lions won't talk to Chaney.
All right, cool.
There's nothing left to say.
You hear that, listeners? A delicious mystery. You know what's not a mystery? The fact that you have been working with the resistance here in the town of AO for a while now, and you've been working with each other in the resistance in the town of AO for a while now. You're basically a cell who works together, a squad. But the bonds that exist between you, they go deeper than simple co-workers. So I'm interested to hear from each of you. What's one thing that ties you to another one of your squad mates that runs deeper than that sort of casual co-worker relationship?
Cleo knows Lions because she actually got injured during one of her investigations. She was helping a mom find her lost son. He ended up actually just being out in a ditch somewhere, which she didn't want, but he was just trapped under a log. And she accidentally injured herself in releasing him from the log. And she actually went to the clinic where Lions was working at the time, and she wanted to just get the materials or items that she needed to patch herself up, but she had lost a lot of blood, so she's kind of stumbling in, and Lions obviously made Cleo stay in and make sure that they could do it themselves, because obviously Cleo does not have the training. Cleo ended up staying in the clinic for about a week until she was back on her feet, and her and Lions became good friends.
Cool.
She also knows local from doing a previous job, which if you haven't listened to Ichor and Breath, you should. Mm-hmm. Click the link above.
Yeah. Like and subscribe.
That they had a long-standing working relationship, actually. I believe that Cleo was sort of locals' pipeline into...
Nice. Drugs.
into nice drugs.
Yeah, into...
Not bad drugs, nice drugs.
Into nice drugs, which is to say... running jobs for Kaw Technologics because you hadn't yet joined the Resistance.
There you go.
Yeah. Local knows Cleo from basically back when he was first awakening. In addition to Marv being there, Cleo is probably the first person that took Local seriously as an individual. Didn't talk down to him or... You know, a lot of people will treat newly awakened robots as being basically like little babies and children. And so he very much appreciated Cleo's candor, her warmth, but also directness with him. And so he feels like he can always trust Cleo to be honest with him. Like, he doesn't feel like there's a lot of like boundaries there between them.
Cool. And Josette, tell me about Lion's special bond.
So Lion's knows Local because one day when Lion's was coming home really late from work, it was raining super hard and there was a box of kittens out in the rain and they were totally uncovered and it was very sad. And Local was trying to get all of the kittens because Local adopts cats like the big-hearted friendly giant he is. But a bunch of them were running away and going in different directions and it was a big mess. And so Lions decided to help Local catch all of the kittens and stuck them inside of Local's chest cavity so that way they could get them home and dry.
And that has had an impact on your relationship with each other since?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you don't save a bunch of cats from the rain and not become friends.
Yeah, even though Lions isn't really a vet, whenever Local has like a question or a problem with one of his many, many little wee kittens, he will come to Lions and ask for their opinion, mostly because of the association, but also he kind of still sees you as being sort of cat-like.
Yeah.
So
he looks like a dog.
He's just like, oh, well, you would know about these creatures, right?
They are cat. They understand cat.
Right. Okay.
I am very fluffy, and I don't really like being wet, but I am still flammable then.
Are cats flammable?
Only certain cats.
Let me tell you about Incineroar. So, one final question for you all before we wrap up this here little character introduction episode. In the city of Ao, it's really common for folks, especially poorer folks, to turn in parts of their body for metal replacements. People who can make a little bit more money get these pretty big, chunky piercings put into their skin that allow them to interface with technology, and the really rich folk, really the bourgeoisie, the 1%, the first in line for the guillotine, they wear very fine jewelry that allows them to perform the same functions that metallic limbs or these piercings would serve. Do any of you have replacement metallic limbs? Or piercings? Local, obviously.
All of them.
Is all of them, yes. But I'm curious about Lions and Cleo.
Well, like I said, Lions has that metal vest, which helps them. But they did have to replace one of the ends of, oh my gosh, I didn't describe their legs, but of one of their talons to better interface. So
like it's this like sort of gnarled root that's been replaced with like a metallic clicker?
Yeah, it's more like when somebody gets acrylic nails. Kind of, except Lions has replaced what would be like the talons of a bird claw, like the nails of those, with metal. And so it's basically they chopped off the ends of one of their fingers on one of their hands and replaced them with fine metal.
Okay. And Cleo?
So Cleo has an eyebrow piercing that kind of, I think we talked about this at some point, maybe not. Like Cookie from Ned's Declassified, how there's like a little square that he pushes down on his glasses that kind of turns into a computer, like scans where he's looking. It's almost like that, just goes over the one eye, but it is like a little contact lens that kind of goes down right where her eye is, or just like one monocle type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it helps her find like, if she's looking for fingerprints or something like that, it's almost like a little UV detector thing that like kind of enhances things. It's not like it's a magnifying glass, but it would do the job of like a camera. So she can do like a night mode or like whatever mm-hmm. a camera lens would do.
Right. It's a generally useful detective gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like it. So thank you for introducing your characters. And listener, thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoy the next episode where we start this journey in full, in earnest.
In AO.
In AO.
Ernest Hemingway.
In Ernest Goes to Jail.
Ernest Goes to AO.
Ernest Goes to AO.
Thank you so much for listening to Arms of the Tide. If you'd like more information about the show, please feel free to follow us on Twitter at Arms of the Tide. Mutants in the Night is a game by DC, and you can purchase it and DC's other games at dungeoncommander.itch.io. That's Commander without the R. Our theme music is by Aaron Catano Saez, and our logo is by Alex Marin. Arms of the Tide is a member of the One Shot Podcast Network. For more exciting shows from the network, check out John's other show, System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games, except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was Hot Wing, don't even at us. Find their shows at SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Thank you again for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.